Chapter 36. Succession of hop grounds and orchards. It was sufficiently late in the year for the orchards to be ruddy with ripe apples, and in a few places the hop pickers were already at work. I thought it all extremely beautiful, and made up my mind to sleep among the hops that night. Imagining some cheerful companionship in the long perspectives of poles, with the graceful leaves twining round them. The trampers were worse than ever that day, and inspired me with a dread that is yet quite fresh in my mind. Some of them were most ferocious-looking ruffians, who stared at me as I went by, and stopped, perhaps, and called after me to come back and speak to them, and when I took to my heels, stoned me. I recollect one young fellow, a tinker, I suppose, from his wallet and brazier, who had a woman with him, and who faced about and stared at me thus, and then roared to me in such a tremendous voice to come back, that I halted and looked round. "Come here, when you're called," apostrophe said the tinker, "or I'll rip your young body open." Apostrophe, I thought it best to go back. As I drew nearer to them, trying to propitiate the tinker by my looks, I observed that the woman had a black eye. "Where are you going?" Apostrophe said the tinker, gripping the bosom of my shirt with his blackened hand. "I am going to Dover," apostrophe I said. "Where do you come from?" Apostrophe asked the tinker, giving his hand another turn in my shirt, to hold me more securely. "I come from London," apostrophe I said. "What lay are you upon?" Apostrophe asked the tinker. "Are you a prig?" No, I said. "Ain't you, by G? If you make a brag of your honesty to me," apostrophe said the tinker, "I'll knock your brains out." Apostrophe, with his disengaged hand he made a menace of striking me, and then looked at me from head to foot. "Have you got the price of a pint of beer about you?" Apostrophe said the tinker. "If you have, out with it, afore I take it away." Apostrophe, I should certainly have produced it, but that I met the woman's look, and saw her very slightly shake her head, and form no. Apostrophe with her lips. "I am very poor," apostrophe I said, attempting to smile, "and have got no money." Apostrophe, "Why, what do you mean?" Apostrophe said the tinker, looking so sternly at me, that I almost feared he saw the money in my pocket. "Sir." Apostrophe I stammered. "What do you mean," apostrophe said the tinker, "by wearing my brother's silk handkerchief? Give it over here." Apostrophe and he had mine off my neck in a moment, and tossed it to the woman. The woman burst into a fit of laughter, as if she thought this a joke, and tossed it back to me, not at once, as slightly as before, and made the word go. Apostrophe with her lips. Before I could obey, however, the tinker seized the handkerchief out of my hand with a roughness that threw me away like a feather, and putting it loosely round his own neck, turned upon the woman with an oath, and knocked her down. I never shall forget seeing her fall backward on the hard road, and lie there with her bonnet tumbled off, and her hair all whitened in the dust, nor, when I looked back from a distance, seeing her sitting on the pathway, which was a bank by the roadside, wiping the blood from her face with a corner of her shawl, while he went on ahead. This adventure frightened me so, that, afterwards, when I saw any of these people coming, I turned back until I could find a hiding place, where I remained until they had gone out of sight, which happened so often, that I was very seriously delayed. But under this difficulty, as under all the other difficulties of my journey, I seemed to be sustained and led on by my fanciful picture of my mother in her youth, before I came into the world. It always kept me company. It was there, among the hops, when I lay down to sleep. It was with me on my waking in the morning. It went before me all day. I have associated it, ever since, with the sunny street of Canterbury, dozing as it were in the hot light, and with the sight of its old houses and gateways, and the stately, grey cathedral, with the rooks sailing round the towers. When I came, at last, upon the bare, wide downs near Dover, it relieved the solitary aspect of the scene with hope. And not until I reached that first great aim of my journey, and actually set foot in the town itself, on the sixth day of my flight, did it desert me. But then, strange to say, when I stood with my ragged shoes, and my moldy, sunburned, half-clothed figure, in the place so long desired, it seemed to vanish like a dream, and to leave me helpless and dispirited. I inquired about my aunt among the boatmen first, and received various answers. One said she lived in the south for lamplight, and had singed her whiskers by doing so. Another, that she was made fast to the great buoy outside the harbor, and could only be visited at half-tide. A third, that she was locked up in Maidstone jail for child-stealing. A fourth, that she was seen to mount a broom in the last high wind, and make direct for Calais. The fly drivers, among whom I inquired next, were equally jocose and equally disrespectful, and the shopkeepers, not liking my appearance, generally replied, without hearing what I had to say, that they had got nothing for me. I felt more miserable and destitute than I had done at any period of my running away. My money was all gone, I had nothing left to dispose of. I was hungry, thirsty, and worn out, and seemed as distant from my end as if I had remained in London. The morning had worn away in these inquiries, and I was sitting on the step of an empty shop at a street corner near the marketplace, deliberating upon wandering towards those other places which had been mentioned, when a fly driver, coming by with his carriage, dropped a horse cloth. Something good-natured in the man's face, as I handed it up, encouraged me to ask him if he could tell me where Miss Trotwood lived, though I had asked the question so often that it almost died upon my lips. "Trotwood," apostrophe said he. "Let me see. I know the name too. Old lady?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe," I said, "rather." "Apostrophe, pretty stiff in the back?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said he, making himself upright. "Yes, apostrophe," I said. "I should think it very likely." "Apostrophe, carries a bag?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said he, "bag with a good deal of room in it is gruffish, and comes down upon you, sharp." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," my heart sank within me as I acknowledged the undoubted accuracy of this description. "Why then, I tell you what, apostrophe," said he. "If you go up there," apostrophe pointing with his whip towards the heights, "and keep right on till you come to some houses facing the sea, I think you'll hear of her. My opinion is she won't stand anything, so here's a penny for you." Apostrophe, I accepted the gift thankfully, and bought a loaf with it. Dispatching this refreshment by the way, I went in the direction my friend had indicated, and walked on a good distance without coming to the houses he had mentioned. At length I saw some before me, and approaching them, went into a little shop, it was what we used to call a general shop, at home, and inquired if they could have the goodness to tell me where Miss Trotwood lived. I addressed myself to a man behind the counter, who was weighing some rice for a young woman, but the latter, taking the inquiry to herself, turned round quickly. "My mistress?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," she said. "What do you want with her, boy?" "Apostrophe, I want, apostrophe," I replied, "to speak to her, if you please." "Apostrophe, to beg of her, you mean," apostrophe retorted the damsel. "No, apostrophe," I said, "indeed." Apostrophe, but suddenly remembering that in truth I came for no other purpose, I held my peace in confusion, and felt my face burn. My aunt's handmaid, as I supposed she was from what she had said, put her rice in a little basket, and walked out of the shop, telling me that I could follow her if I wanted to know where Miss Trotwood lived. I needed no second permission. Though I was by this time in such a state of consternation and agitation, that my legs shook under me. I followed the young woman, and we soon came to a very neat little cottage with cheerful bow windows. In front of it, a small square gravel quarter garden full of flowers, carefully tended, and smelling deliciously. This is Miss Trotwood's, apostrophe said the young woman. Now you know, and that's all I have got to say. Apostrophe with which words she hurried into the house, as if to shake off the responsibility of my appearance, and left me standing at the garden gate, looking disconsolately over the top of it towards the parlor window, where a muslin curtain partly undrawn in the middle, a large round green screen or fan fastened onto the windowsill, a small table, and a great chair, suggested to me that my aunt might be at that moment seated in awful state. My shoes were by this time in a woeful condition. The soles had shed themselves bit by bit, and the upper leathers had broken, and burst until the very shape and form of shoes had departed from them. My hat, which had served me for a nightcap, too, was so crushed and bent that no old battered handleless saucepan on the dunghill need have been ashamed to vie with it. My shirt and trousers, stained with heat, dew, grass, and the Kentish soil on which I had slept and torn besides might have frightened the birds from my aunt's garden as I stood at the gate. My hair had known no comb or brush since I left London. My face, neck, and hands, from unaccustomed exposure to the air and sun, were burnt to a berry brown. From head to foot I was powdered almost as white with chalk and dust, as if I had come out of a lime kiln. In this plight, and with a strong consciousness of it, I waited to introduce myself to, and make my first impression on, my formidable aunt. The unbroken stillness of the parlor window leading me to infer, after a while, that she was not there, I lifted up my eyes to the window above it, where I saw a florid, pleasant-looking gentleman, with a gray head, who shut up one eye in a grotesque manner, nodded his head at me several times, shook it at me as often, laughed, and went away. I had been discomposed enough before, but I was so much the more discomposed by this unexpected behavior, that I was on the point of slinking off, to think how I had best proceed, when there came out of the house a lady with her handkerchief tied over her cap, and a pair of gardening gloves on her hands, wearing a gardening pocket like a toll man's apron, and carrying a great knife. I knew her immediately to be Miss Betsy, for she came stalking out of the house exactly as my poor mother had so often described her stalking up our garden at Blunderstone Rookery. Go away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Betsy, shaking her head, and making a distant chop in the air with her knife. Go along. No boys here. Apostrophe, I watched her, with my heart at my lips, as she marched to a corner of her garden, and stooped to dig up some little root there. Then, without a scrap of courage, but with a great deal of desperation, I went softly in and stood beside her, touching her with my finger. If you please, ma'am, apostrophe, I began. She started and looked up. If you please, aunt. Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Miss Betsy, in a tone of amazement I have never heard approached. If you please, aunt, I am your nephew. Apostrophe, oh, Lord. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said my aunt, and sat flat down in the garden path. I am David Copperfield, of Blunderstone, in Suffolk, where you came, on the night when I was born, and saw my dear mama. I have been very unhappy since she died. I have been slighted, and taught nothing, and thrown upon myself, and put to work not fit for me. It made me run away to you. I was robbed at first setting out, and have walked all the way, and have never slept in a bed, since I began the journey. Apostrophe, here my self-support gave way all at once, and with a movement of my hands, intended to show her my ragged state, and call it to witness that I had suffered something, I broke into a passion of crying, which I suppose had been pent up within me all the week. My aunt, with every sort of expression, but wonder discharged from her countenance, sat on the gravel, staring at me, until I began to cry, when she got up in a great hurry, collared me, and took me into the parlor. Her first proceeding there was to unlock a tall press, bring out several bottles, and pour some of the contents of each into my mouth. I think they must have been taken out at random, for I am sure I tasted aniseed water, anchovy sauce, and salad dressing. When she had administered these restoratives, as I was still quite hysterical, and unable to control my sobs, she put me on the sofa, with a shawl under my head, and the handkerchief from her own head under my feet, lest I should sully the cover, and then, sitting herself down behind the green fanner screen I have already mentioned, so that I could not see her face, ejaculated at intervals, "Mercy on us!" letting those exclamations off like minute guns. After a time she rang the bell. "Janet," said my aunt, when her servant came in. "Go upstairs, give my compliments to Mr. Dick, and say I wish to speak to him." Janet looked a little surprised to see me lying stiffly on the sofa.
I was afraid to move lest it should be displeasing to my aunt, but went on her errand.
My aunt, with her hands behind her, walked up and down the room, until the gentleman who had squinted at me from the upper window came in laughing. "Mr. Dick," said my aunt, "don't be a fool, because nobody can be more discreet than you can, when you choose. We all know that. So don't be a fool, whatever you are." The gentleman was serious immediately, and looked at me, I thought, as if he would entreat me to say nothing about the window. "Mr. Dick," said my aunt, "you have heard me mention David Copperfield? Now don't pretend not to have a memory, because you and I know better. David Copperfield?" said Mr. Dick, who did not appear to me to remember much about it. "David Copperfield? Oh yes, to be sure. David, certainly. Said my aunt, "this is his boy, his son. He would be as like his father as it's possible to be, if he was not so like his mother too." "His son?" said Mr. Dick. "David's son? Indeed. Yes," pursued my aunt, "and he has done a pretty piece of business. He has run away. Ah! His sister, Betsy Trotwood, never would have run away." My aunt shook her head firmly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.